up, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast, The Real Rundown. I'm here with Scott and Pedro. What up, guys?
Hey, happy October, Halloween time.
You know, just by you giving that intro, I'm very scared of what we're going to talk about. So can you keep me abreast so I'm not so scared of what you're going to both say and what I'm going to say?
It won't be that scary, I promise. We are going to talk about Goosebumps on Hulu and Disney Plus. I've been watching it on Hulu, but everything I read, it just only mentions Disney Plus.
Now, is it a better experience if you watch it on Disney Plus than in Hulu? Or is it the same? Because I watched it on Hulu.
Okay, yeah. No, it's the same. I would say better experience is probably the one that you have to click the remote the least. We liked it, so we'll talk about that. And then we're also going to talk about John Carpenter's Suburban Screams on Peacock, and we'll wrap up with Pet Sematary Bloodlines on Paramount Plus. I want to start just briefly recapping my little weekend at Comic-Con. Every weekend, every year, usually I go to Comic-Con, check it out. Lucky enough to usually get a press pass. Pedro, you've been to Comic-Con, right?
Yes, I have.
Scott?
I was able to attend virtually because we worked on a project and I was able to get a nice glimpse of it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. This old video I produced. So I usually go. I don't think I went last year, but I'm noticing as I get older, like a generational shift there. And you can always like, I guess, identify this by like what is like the big content that everyone is like, what costumes are people wearing and what are the big brands that are there. So this year I'd say the number one costume was probably Luffy, the pirate from One Piece, which has the number one show on Netflix. And I don't know if you guys watched Into the Spider-Verse, that Spider-Man animated film, but there's like a British punk rock Spider-Man called Spider-Punk, and there was a few of those guys there. They look pretty badass if you want to Google them real quick.
I'm more of a traditionalist. I stick with the Spider-Man costume, not go in other directions. But
I feel like you just be Peter Parker. You just show up with a camera, no costume, and
you know what? Probably, you know, it would be the most reasonable costume. I just have to show up.
Comic-Con has turned more into more of like the spectator and like celebrity sighting type things versus like people going in and nerding out and buying stuff, right?
A little bit, yeah. The buying, people always buy stuff, but that is usually pushed to the back of the show, where like when we enter, Paramount Plus had like huge staging, so they were promoting Good Burger 2, that show from the 90s, the movie from the 90s. I never liked that movie. Those characters are so annoying. Sorry, Scott.
It was from all that, and if for those who know, welcome to the Good Burger, home of the Burger. Can I take your order?
It went from a skit to a full-length movie.
That's right.
Keenan and Kel, right?
Yes.
Wait, Keenan and Kel was its own show, though, was it not?
It was, and then it went from all that, then it turned into Keenan and Kel, but Keenan and Kel had nothing to do with Good Burger.
I like.
That was a completely separate sitcom series.
I'll be checking for the new one because I enjoyed the original one.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So they had that. They had a big, so they had like the burger stand and everything. My wife and I went through. We got a little pin. I don't know. Whatever you get.
Was there any orange soda?
Nah, you play a game. It's cool. Okay. They also had like the Ninja Turtles. The actual Ninja Turtle characters were there in costume. They looked just like the movie ones. But they were really the only big brand that I saw there. I feel like, you know, I mentioned like the popular costumes, but what I really saw more of was like manga and anime characters. And I feel like that is the trend of, you know, the younger generation. Gen Z now is attending these, and they like the anime and manga characters. And then the older folks who are like my age and older, those are the guys you see dressed up as like Sweet Tooth. I saw a really good Sweet Tooth there. You see Wolverine and Gambit, and you know, I feel like Marvel and DC were completely absent from from this year's Comic-Con. And I think that's a reflection of what people think of comic book movies today. And that being sort of, you know, yesteryear's flavor. That was my takeaway. It was interesting to see the change. For show. All right, we're going to stick with the Halloween theme. That's what we're doing today. We're going to talk about scary movies, scary shows. It's October. It's one of our favorite seasons for watching films. And some of our favorite movies of all time are horror movies. Scott, I know you're not a big fan of horror movies. You mentioned last time.
No, I'm not. But I'm interested to hear both of your favorite movies to see if I'm familiar with them and try to agree with them being good. But as far as the storyline, if I can predict the end, but no, it's they're fun for those who enjoy it.
Cool. So Pedro, you and I will do like our favorite top three Halloween movies or horror movies, I guess. I don't want to call them Halloween movies because mine are not really Halloween movies. And then I got a couple of notables that I just want to shout out. I'll start with my number three, and I kind of went back and forth with this one, but I think my number three is It Follows. Do you remember that movie, It Follows, Peter?
I love that movie. I saw it when it came out in theaters. I didn't, you know, it was a movie that me and my friend just went to go see, spur of the moment thing. We saw it like downtown at like an indie theater.
Yeah. Now,
a lot of people hate that movie and don't like it, but the experience, really? The experience I had was just amazing with that movie in theaters. So everything from like the atmosphere to the soundtrack to just like not knowing what's going on and it just being completely different, the monster, quote unquote, you know?
Yeah. It was super fresh. And it was like, you ever have that dream where like a monster or something is chasing you and you just run at really slow speed? You just can't escape. It never really catches you, but you wake up. That's what this movie is like. It's someone is constantly after our main character who is cursed, and the only way to pass on the curse is by having sex with someone else, and then that ghost or creature begins following that person. So there's that constant anxiety throughout the film that something is always running after you or headed your way. It aesthetically, I agree everything you said, Pedro. The direction was great. Aesthetically, it was really dope. It was like an indie horror movie, and it was a total surprise when it came out. Sleeper hit.
It sounds quite indie, and I would be curious. I would be more scared to watch the movie, less scared to watch the movie, but more scared to be in the writer's room of them writing this, right? Of them writing the storyline and going, oh no, we should make it about that. Based on the way you're describing it, it seems quite interesting, yeah. Of a storyline.
Maybe it was based on like a short story from back in the day or something. I don't know. I don't know where it came from. I looked up the director and what he had been up to. Not much. He did a movie called Under the Silver Lake in 2018, which I think I heard of.
I watched that movie. I didn't get through the whole thing. It's another one of those movies that it's not for everyone. But if you're one of the people it's for, it's considered like a hidden gem underground, like classic already.
Okay, that might be a good recommendation. I might check that out.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's definitely interesting.
What's your number three?
So I'm not going to label these in any particular order, just because I've mentioned it before. I've just always been into like horror and scary movies and slashers and B-movies ever since I was a little kid. So I don't really have an out-and-out favorite, but the ones that I'll always love are like Child's Play, and Nightmare on Elm Street. Just because growing up, there were like so many sequels to that.
Yeah.
And then with the Child's Play movie, they just had like got a special place in my heart. Cause I remember being like a kid and watching it with my mom and my sister. And then it was just like an ongoing thing where like, you know, we would always like make fun of my sister's like dolls, baby dolls, and say they were possessed and stuff. So
now I know full circle what a great brother you were, making sure your sister was not scared out of her mind.
Yeah, So they're all good. And now that Chucky has like a series, I'm watching it with my nephew now. So it's like going from one generation to the next. And he's like a fan of a Child's Play series too. So
I thought it was, when you mentioned that, I was thinking that it seemed, the character seemed like it was a spinoff of into creating Chucky. So yeah.
That makes sense. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chucky was, had a special place every Halloween, because that movie was like always on USA or TNT when we were growing up. I totally slept on that. It terrified me, but I watched it so many times. It's not one of my all-time favorites, but it's always going to be a classic for sure.
Well, I also rewatched the first one like not too long ago, maybe like 2-3 years ago. And the first one is very adult themed, you know, even though all the kids saw it back in the day and everything, but it's like, it's very real. There's a lot of cursing. There's like,
there's a full blown man serial killer in that doll.
Yeah. And it has to do with like Haitian voodoo and like all this stuff. And like, it's interesting to go back and watch and just see how like, how adult it was, you know?
Does the new show keep that origin?
Yeah, the new show is awesome, man. I'm a big fan of the new show because it ties all of that together. There, even the original kid Andy from the movie, who's now an adult, makes appearances in it.
Oh, wow.
And like, he's still battling this thing. It's like, it's cool, man. Everything is tied up in the, they tie up all those sequels that happen, Bride of Chucky, all of those like spin-offs and stuff. They tie all of that in. And they also get into his backstory, which is cool.
The serial killer?
Mm-hmm.
Dope.
Yeah. I appreciate you, Pedro, that you're giving your unbiased list, not putting numbers, just listing them as they come along. But then Bruno's like, number three, number two, and then the number one horror film is.
No, my number one and two are kind of, they're in no particular order because I love them.
Oh, okay.
I love them both, but I'll list one. These are going to sound a little cliche, and I'm sorry for that, but my number two, I guess, is Alien. And my number one is kind of similar to Alien, but I always like movies where you have, you know, like a ragtag of characters who each have their really like fleshed out personalities and differences and backstories. And you put them in an enclosed environment with something that's trying to kill them. I just really love that kind of story. And in the case of Alien, obviously they're on a spaceship headed back to Earth. They hear a distress signal. They explore it, and an alien enters the ship. And just the way the some of the secrets and the what's really happening is revealed. The way they fight the alien is really dope. As a kid, this movie terrified me, but as I watched it as an adult, I really admired the hell out of it for just how it was directed and how the story and the characters were fleshed out. And it's also extremely imaginative. Like this, like they really thought it out. Like this ragtag space crew who's just kind of going back to Earth, and they're really just going back from work. It kind of normalized space in a way that I thought was interesting. And then the alien
is funny. It's funny you mentioned that as one of your favorite horror movies, because that's technically my favorite sci-fi movie.
Okay,
like if
yeah.
someone were to ask me what my favorite sci-fi movie is, I would say Aliens. And like, you know me, I'm a huge fan of that and the backstory and the lore and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't personally consider it a horror movie, but it does have sci-fi, horror, thriller, all three of those elements combined.
Yeah, no, it's a mixed genre because it's horror, but it takes place in space. And so obviously it's going to be mixed. I'd say part two is like sci-fi, more sci-fi, less horror, and more action. Because there's just a lot of gunfights in that one. And this one is really bare bones. They are not, you know, military operatives. They're not soldiers. They don't have guns at their disposal like that to fight this thing. They're just in the situation they find themselves in. Really cool. What's your next one?
One of my favorites that I try to rewatch every year is The Lost Boys.
Oh damn.
1980s.
I wouldn't even think of that one.
Teenage vampire movie. With Corey Feldman, a couple other people. It just has a lot of elements I like. You know, it has the horror, has the scary stuff. It also has like all these.
It has that cool factor.
It has that cool factor with Keith Sutherland and that look, you know, as a vampire. And it has some comedy. It has all these like teen actors. So it has like a variety of characters in it. So it's a little mix of everything, you know, because, you know, I like a little comedy in my horror, and I like, you know, sometimes I like it like that. And it's just, it's got a little blend of everything. So it's one that I try to watch every year that I really like.
Yeah, we should recommend that one 100%, because I'm sure a lot of people listening haven't seen that one.
I'm surprised that they haven't tried to remake that or something. It's just remained like a
classic.
It's
just sitting right there too.
Yeah.
They didn't make, there was no sequels, there was no spin-offs, there was no, they didn't do anything else with that property.
It's on its own. It's just great like that. And then it was directed by Joel Schumacher, you know, great.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Director and stuff, so. Yeah. And then I'll just quickly mention, in terms of like horror, scary movie, the one movie that has always scared me and will always scare me and scarred me for life because I was way too young when I saw it, was Hellraiser.
Oh my God, yeah. I would go to the video store and that box art, I'd be like, nah, I'm not fucking with this.
It's a funny story, the way I ended up watching that movie. I was like, after like a little league softball game, we were just hanging out at the coach's, with the coach's son at their place. And of course you leave kids unsupervised, and like, you know, the dad has like the cable hot box with like all the premium channels, and I think it was showing on like Cinemax or like HBO or something. And this kid threw that movie on for like our whole team, and I was just like petrified in the corner from like just the images. And I didn't understand anything until I rewatched it a bunch of times as an adult. But even as an adult, and I just, that movie just gave me creeps, and I just like, it's embedded and scarred in my mind forever.
Yeah, those movies, like, I'm not a big horror movie person. I do get legit scared. I legit get scared. So I kind of stay away from those horror movies. But there's always the allure, like it follows, you know. I was like, oh, I really want to watch that. It looks great. The idea, the concept is so good, but I know I'm going to have a hard time like sitting through it. And then Hellraiser is like a whole different, that's like straight up horror. That's, yeah, I couldn't watch those movies. I think I did see Hellraiser, and then I saw like some of the recent sequel, which was just awful. So psychologically, I'm like, well, you can kind of laugh at it. And that, like,
I actually enjoyed the I think it was a Netflix remake or so, or a Hulu. It was a Hulu remake or reimagining or like some sort of sequel. But yeah, it was on Hulu. It was on Hulu, and I did like it. I thought it was pretty good.
Did you see the trailer for the new one? It's a female Hellraiser as the lead.
Yeah, I think that's the one I'm talking about.
That came out already?
The Hulu version. Yeah, that came out like last year, I think.
Okay. I remember seeing the trailer. Yeah, I don't really mess with that kind of horror. I can't mess with that. My last one, which is probably my favorite horror movie of all time, is The Thing. It's a John Carpenter movie. I didn't see that movie until like my late 20s, probably, because where I used to work, this guy was like a big horror movie fan, and he's like, "Oh, you got to watch The Thing." And it blew me away. I've seen it a bunch of times since then. Again, it leads to like the kind of movies I like, where you have a bunch of ragtag characters isolated in a location, having to deal with this. In this case, again, it's an alien. But just the way it's set up, the way that it opens with the Norwegians like shooting at that running canine who's running away from Norwegians, runs into this scientific facility. And, you know, it's basically an alien that can mimic itself to make it look like anyone. And it just creates so much chaos, distrust, violence. This thing is, and it was all done, you know, before CGI and anything like that. So everything you see on screen is like built, which is crazy.
That movie is like top of the class whenever you want to like look at animatronics,
it's always like, mentioned
what they did with that is like top of the line. And I believe it was Stan Winston, the animatronics special effects person, like a famous guy. He did all the stuff back in the 80s and 70s.
What year did that movie get released?
That was 79, I think.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, no.
Was that late 70s, early 80s? It might have been 82.
It might have been 82.
But that and Aliens, like sci-fi horror, if that's the genre you want to call it, that's it, you know? That's like, there's nothing above those two. Those are like the holy grails.
Yeah, they're kind of the cliche, but they are the masters for good reason. Infinitely rewatchable. Now, what's your last pick?
I'll just switch it up a bit, but I just want to give an honorable mention to a movie I saw last year. And as we all know, horror movies are few and far between nowadays. You don't really see one, but Barbarian.
Oh yeah,
a movie I saw last year. I just want to give an honorable mention to that because
great movie.
It was great. It was really good. It was different. There were a lot of twists and turns. It wasn't what you expected. And you know, I think the only good horror movie before that I had seen in a while was probably going back to Hereditary, which is probably like 3-4 years ago now.
That was almost my number three. That movie probably scared me like no other movie has scared me since like The Exorcist.
Recently. Yeah, recently. So, and then before that, I can't even think of like, maybe it goes back to It Follows or something, you know? So just honorable mention to Barbarian in terms of newish horror movies that get the job done. I really enjoyed that. That was done really well.
I want to mention a quick few of my own honorable mentions real quick. I just want to mention The Babadook, which I think was like 2014. I saw that in theaters. Highly recommend that. Scream, the original Scream was brilliant at the time because it sort of like was a twist on all the horror genre that we were used to.
100%, yeah.
And then Jaws was the first movie that really terrified me. I could not go in a swimming pool for years, like in the deep end for years, dude. When I saw like they show a kid who was all chewed up or something in the first victim that they really show, oh my God, that scared the hell out of me. So I just want to shout those little beats.
Post-traumatic stress on going into pools. Got it.
Let's talk about Goosebumps. Did you guys read Goosebumps as a kid? What's your intro to Goosebumps?
I can't say I ever opened up a Goosebumps book, but I definitely was familiar with its existence and that it was a well-known, well-successful scholastic collection book.
I as a kid, I read a bunch of the books. The books were awesome. The covers were cool. They had like, they felt like just the feeling of the cover. They had texture. They like the letters would pop out. The books were, from what I remember, easy reads as kids and just, you know, awesome. And I've watched like, I probably like at some point watched every iteration of it. I think there was like a Nickelodeon like TV series version of it. There was a movie. The movie was good that came out a few years ago. Then they made a sequel to the Goosebumps movie, which I didn't see. I haven't seen yet, but I did enjoy the movie version. So I've consumed like every iteration of it somehow. And I've enjoyed all of them. They're just great classic books, classic stories.
I believe the Goosebumps series was on Fox Kids.
There you go.
Yeah, I remember watching the series. I did also read a couple of the books. I still have the books at my parents' house, actually, the ones that I read anyway. But yeah, the covers, getting the covers were so, just such a good feeling to touch the book. That was part of the appeal, to be honest. But yeah, the 90s series was fun because at that time we were still kids, so it was good to bring a lot of those stories to life. And now they rebooted it once again on Hulu and Disney Plus. And it follows the story of, I don't want to say, so there's a flashback to like the 1990s where this kid apparently gets killed in his basement. We don't really know why yet. At least I haven't found out why. I've only seen three episodes. But then his ghost sort of comes back a couple, 30 years later to haunt the town. And the story is told through the teenagers who go to the high school there, as well as the parents. It's multi-generational, which I thought was pretty cool. Going into the show, expectations were very low for me. Just because the old Fox show wasn't very good. I didn't find the new movie iterations to be very interesting, but it's still a property that is, connected to my childhood. So I just wanted to check it out when Pedro mentioned that it was out. But I do like it.
I thought it was good. Surprisingly, it felt like a teen soap opera kind of.
Totally,
With this scary layer to it. And there was quite a, since it was a young cast, quite a few of the cast members were not really recognizable. But I know that Rachel Harris was in it, who is fairly well known. She's been a secondary character in a lot of different movies. And then, of course, Justin Long has been in quite a many things. We started out with being in that TV series Ed on ABC many, many years ago. And I was in plenty of, he's been in quite a few horror films.
Good to see him in this. He does the oddball kind of, he just shows up. He was in the movie that Pedro mentioned. He was in Barbarian.
He was in Barbarian.
Yeah. So he was also in a strange movie called Tusk, I think it's called, a Kevin Smith movie. So it was good to see him here.
Yeah. He's always finds himself in good movies and shows. I really liked it. I love the format that they're doing where it's one overarching story, but every episode you're seeing it from a different one of the characters' sort of perspective or mini story within it. And then each one of those is based on one of the Goosebumps books. One is The Mask, the other one is the camera. So I like that they switched up the format instead of it being an anthology series where every episode is standalone and tells a different book story. It's all coming together with this overarching story. I thought that was cool. I thought the actors were cool. They look a little old to be teenagers, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I think
that's how it always is. The kids are the usually the high schoolers are usually graduated from college.
Yeah. But it's a little more obvious in this one, but I like all the different characters, all the different teens, the diversity and everything. I thought it was cool. It's fun. It's a fun series, and it does give you that sort of teen kind of CW soap opera type.
Absolutely, yeah.
Vibe.
But it's better than that.
But it's better than that, and they chose a great setting for it. They haven't revealed exactly where it is. I mean, there's a name in the town, but you get the idea. It's somewhere up in Washington State or something up in the yeah. Pacific Northwest.
And it's funny that you mentioned scenery. It's funny that you mentioned the CW, because this show is, with pretty much every show on the CW is produced in Canada. This show is done in Canada. Yeah. It's done in Canada.
Yeah, it's geared a little bit towards a younger audience, I'm guessing. But I think you're absolutely right about the cast. A lot of these types of characters can easily just be poorly written and annoying as hell, but they're not to my
even
surprise.
Even if it is geared towards a younger audience, as an adult, I'm enjoying it, and I'm watching it with my wife and she's enjoying it, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's on Netflix, right?
Netflix or Disney.
Hulu and
it's
Disney
on Hulu.
Plus.
Yes, it's on Hulu and Disney Plus. Yes, I wouldn't be surprised if most of the people watching it are, adults in
our generation.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is our stuff, man.
But just for full transparency, how many we're judging it based on how many episodes? Because how many episodes are in the series versus how many episodes we've watched that were we're looking at it from only watching part of it.
Well, I believe there's 10 episodes total, but 5 are available now, and then the rest are going to be released episodic. I've only seen 3 so far, but that's because I was watching other stuff for this show. But so far, yeah, I've only seen 2. Oh, man. I'm looking at the episode list, the Cuckoo Clock of Doom. I have not seen that one yet.
You mentioned you were going to watch 3. You happened to get to 2?
Well, once you get to 2 has that surprise ending. If you watch 2, you'll see that surprise ending. Yeah, where it's like, oh, what the hell just happened? And then they explain it in the following episode. So
you mentioned, this is the issue of watching an episode one after the other. When you said surprise, I'm like, what surprise? Because I literally saw that and then it picked right up like 3 seconds later. So I'm like, that's not a surprise. It was just a continuation.
I'm surprised that they're going to do that many episodes, because there's about 6 episodes on right now. And I have 2 episodes to go. And it seems like they could just wrap it up within these next 2 episodes. So I'll be surprised how they're going to stretch it out. Because I'm already up to the part where they told each of the characters they're following, each teenager's like side story from what happened at this party. So,
okay. Yeah. So there's like a big party in the first episode. And then at least in the second episode, you follow another character, but we go back to that scene and we see the story from her perspective and the night from her perspective. That's the night where things really like open up for the characters.
Because these crazy teens decided to have a Halloween party in a house that was technically haunted, where a kid died, and there were many items such as masks and cameras that were haunted and enchanted, and they're all suffering the consequences now.
See, now I'm going to be nervous every time I touch a camera, because that was going to happen every time I touch a camera. Something's going to alter reality.
Yeah, so it looks like this might be one of the first shows where we're actually going to continue and see it to the end. Congrats. No, I did watch Twisted Metal.
I am. I definitely am.
Don't congratulate us. Let's see what happens after we're done and see if we actually go back to finish it. It's one thing to say we're going to. We have to follow through on it. That's the biggest challenge.
And just FYI, it seems like the original show, the 1995 TV series, is on Netflix, and it's been on there for a while.
Apparently. They have
like all the episodes on there.
That's dangerous. I wonder what people are going to do next. They're going to be watching Goosebumps series.
It's also been well received. It's at 75 on Rotten Tomatoes, 68 audience score, but I'd say that's 75 is fair. It's a good show. I want to pivot now to a different platform. We're going to hop from Hulu to Peacock. John Carpenter released a series called Suburban Screams. Pedro, I know you saw the first episode. Scott, I made you aware of the show. I think you might have some interesting feedback. and I think you should check it out.
I may have not been listening to the past 10 minutes of watching it right now.
Oh, okay. So I was curious about this show. It's on Peacock. It's called Suburban Screams. But it's not good. It's not good at all. I also didn't realize that it was an anthology. It's sort of an interview series where they go back and recall an unsolved mystery, or just like episode 2 is pretty tough to watch. It's about an escaped mental patient / serial killer in a small town of Canada. But Pedro, you watched the first episode about the Ouija board, the drowning girl spirit. You didn't hate it.
I didn't hate it because I wasn't watching it thinking like, oh, this is going to be horror. This is going to be scary. It's more creepy. It's not scary. So it's more of, at least with the first episode, it was more of a creepy type thing. It's like, okay, they're saying it's based on a true story, So they can't lie about that. But, you know, I was left wondering, are the sit-down interviews the real people that went through these events? Or are they actors portraying the people that went through these events, playing them as being interviewed and narrating the story? I thought the format was okay. It was different, so I respected it for that. And it brings, you know, it brings a little more, I guess, legitimacy to the true, based on true events slogan, if you have someone sitting down telling what happened to them and narrating it like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the reenactment that's really going to either hit or miss for each of the episodes. For example, episode 2, again, was about this mentally deranged person who escapes jail and terrorizes this town, literally like murders 2 old women, sadly. And there's not a ton of reenactment footage used. They rely on like newspaper clippings a lot, and the head of the newspaper or the person who was leading the story at that time. And but it doesn't, it just feels slow and just not interesting. There is a shot that they do reenact this guy breaking into two old ladies' house, and he's like violently like pummeling this woman in the face like nonstop. And it just left a real poor taste in my mouth. Like, I don't want to watch this. It's not, I don't know, it's just gratuitous violence for the sake of showing it. And I didn't think the stories were really that captivating, the two that I watched anyway.
Yeah, I agree. Looking down the list of episodes, nothing seems like, oh my God, this was a true story. I need to see what happened.
If you consider all the Netflix documentaries that are, you know, not necessarily in this genre of horror, but just the production value, the way the stories are told, the money they spent in retelling these stories. When you have these, you break it down to like a little 40-minute piece, which is, you can tell it's kind of low budget. It just doesn't hit. It just doesn't hit the level that.
Well, I was reading an article about it, and they mentioned that it's kind of like Peacock's answer to an Amazon show called Lore and Netflix's Unsolved Mysteries reboot.
Okay.
So it's kind of like just their answer to that, since there seem to be a couple of different shows doing this type of stuff right now, which is funny because it was something that was, I remember it being more popular like back in the 90s.
It was a 90s
stuff,
thing,
right?
Yeah.
It was more 90s, you know, like the original Unsolved Mysteries, the Outer Limits or whatever those shows were. So
this sounds like a non-narrated version of Dateline, but that's with someone interviewing the various characters. And it also seems like, just like was on TLC, I believe, Untold Stories of the ER, which is essentially another docudrama, which is essentially people talking about something that happened. And the seriousness of the show is just based on how good and how high quality the reenactment footage is. Because if it seems way too comical and low quality, it completely takes out all the seriousness.
Yep, that's exactly what it is.
And someone could be telling a good story, but if it looks like a joke, you're going to take the whole story as a joke and not take it seriously.
Yeah, it's missing. But Scott, I recommend you watch that one episode just to check it out.
And also, since they're all standalone episodes, you know, if you're not really feeling one, like the first episode was pretty bad, it's nothing to make you want to watch more. So,
true.
Since the stories aren't connected, there's no reason for anyone to go back if it's not great. You know?
Yeah, there's
and
no
that's,
hope. Yeah.
That's the risk. I guess that's the risk these shows take. So.
I'll give it the one chance watch. The one chance watch. See if I can get through the one episode.
And before we quickly move on, I just thought it was a weird choice that the interview setup is the same for all the episodes. So they all look identical. Which I thought that was strange.
Are they all wearing the same clothes?
No.
They're the same chair.
They also...
same background.
You know the interview shot? Like, the way I, you know, I'm looking at Pedro right now. He's looking at camera. They do a reverse where you're looking at the guy, the back of the guy's head. I don't know. Interesting choices made there. Let's move on.
Interesting sounds like bad choices, but we'll interesting is more like, no, it sounds good on paper, but
that's Bruno's code for bad is interesting.
Yeah, I'll leave it up to yours.
I see right past that. Just like being transparent. You can see through the glass, but you don't know what's happening on the opposite side. Next.
Pet Sematary Bloodlines on Paramount Plus. This came out October 6th, I think. It's a prequel to the classic from 1989 or 88, which I saw, but I can't even remember that movie. Also based on a Stephen King novel. I was looking forward to this, man. And it was whack. It was not good.
It wasn't good.
No, it wasn't good.
This one, no interesting for this one. It wasn't good.
Yeah. Where did they fail? Are you familiar with like the Pet Sematary lore at all?
I am, yeah. I actually like the original. I like the sequel with Edward Furlong from Terminator 2. It's one of those 90s horror movies that you can't miss. And I even like the remake that came out 4 or 5 years ago, a couple years ago. Yeah. So I'm a fan of the lore. I'm a fan of the story. This one wasn't good. I mean, the fact that they made a prequel is cool to get, because we've seen all these movies and iterations of it, but we still have never seen something. So what I did like about it is that where it took place in the 1960s, early 60s, I guess.
Yes, 69, I think.
Yes, and then that it was a prequel to the movie, and that's about it. Everything was pretty bad in between. And then, like, the only real, like, oh, shit moment I had was at the very end when I knew it was a prequel, but then when they showed this, when they showed the main character, right?
Judd,
at the end, sitting on his rocking chair or on his front porch, that's when it took me the whole movie to tie it in. I'm like, that's the old guy from the original movie.
Yeah, that's the same house. Yeah. And all that.
Yep. Yeah. And it wasn't until that shot, because I believe that might be one of the opening shots in the beginning of the original movie, is that same character, Judson, as an old man, which I think was played by the same guy that played Herman Munster or something.
Yeah.
In that same position in front of the house on the rocking chair. I'm like, okay, the whole movie was bad, but like that last shot was great.
Yeah, it was just they give it away right at the beginning, right? Like the first shot, they kind of tell you exactly what happened, which is like this guy buried his son so he can revive him.
Which I also have a problem with that, because they never explained. So apparently his son died in Vietnam. He was strapped into Vietnam. How did he get his son's body back and nobody knew that his son's body was back, or that he died in Vietnam? The whole town, they were supposedly all closely knit. The teenagers were all friends. Nobody knew this kid died in Vietnam or that his body was brought back to the U.S.
Yeah, they tried to communicate like that his dad was grieving, but that never really comes through. And at the end, he's just like, yeah, I messed up. Let's go get him, guys. And then it's like, wait, what? They go in like the Ghostbusters. They all get killed for the dumbest reasons. Like, they just do the dumbest things. And yeah, the plot, because they give it away so early, there's just like nothing really. I feel like the story structure was not quite there. Something was broken somewhere, because you're kind of just going through it. But there's no change in anyone or with anything.
Was this a new movie, or did it just, because it looks
this
like...
This is a new movie. It just premiered this weekend or last week.
Oh, because I... On Peacock. Because isn't there... Oh, on Peacock. Okay. Because there was another movie...
Straight to Peacock.
Because there was Pet Sematary from 2019, which is on Paramount. So that's a completely different movie. That's completely separate.
Yeah, that's, I think, a remake, I believe.
Yeah, that's a remake. And I mentioned that. That's the one I mentioned that I thought was okay, too. It wasn't amazing, but it was okay.
Yeah, I did think the cinematography and the aesthetic, I thought looked pretty cool. Like, things looked cool. there's a shot with Timmy, who's like the zombie type character, like behind a crappy screen door looking out. And
yeah, that was a good shot.
That was really cool.
That might have been my favorite scene out of the whole movie, because the girl gets attacked by the dog there. Yeah. And
so that was a jump scare. I didn't expect that.
That was the most tense and best part of the movie was there. There was nothing else after.
There was nothing else. They didn't really introduce anything new into the Pet Sematary lore. It was just like, yeah, by the way, this thing has been here for centuries. We've been dealing with it. I don't know what that even means.
It's info that we already knew. We already know that, you know, the town, you know, it was an ancient native burial ground. I like the fact that they included like two Native American characters in here.
Probably the best characters. Probably two of the best characters.
Yeah. And, you know, that their family lineage was tied to this town and what's happening here. So, that you know, that was cool. But it wasn't new information that we didn't already know. But it was cool that we saw characters with links to this actual burial ground.
And shout out to David Duchovny. He had a...
Was that him or was that a lookalike?
No, that was him.
That was him?
Yeah. He got old real quick.
Hey, don't...
Let's
not hate on David Duchovny, okay?
No, I love David Duchovny.
The funny thing is because there's an actor that looks like him. Not completely, he has a beard. He's always had a beard, like a scruffy beard, but he looks like he has got like the same like eyes and nose. And I didn't know if it was that same guy or just David Duchovny with a beard, because I've never seen him, but it was him.
That must be a stunt double.
We're going to leave it there, guys. We're literally running out of time. But this was a cool, very cool episode. Don't forget to like, don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you for the Thanksgiving special. Peace.